If you like weird history, true crime, haunted and paranormal, then pause the podcast you're listening to right now and subscribe to Ghost Town wherever you listen to podcasts. We also have a video component to our favorite Ghost Town episodes at youtube.com/Jason Horton. Episodes like The Los Feliz Murder House, The Toxic Lady, The Black Dahlia, Janis Joplin's Hotel Room, The Haunted Roosevelt Hotel, and more. Just go to youtube.com/Jason Horton. That's youtube.com/JasonHorton. And while you're there, please subscribe so you don't miss any new episodes. Thank you. It's the Friends Without Benefits podcast. My name is Jason Horton. Welcome to the show. Today, I'm talking to Carlos Ramirez. He's a musician, producer, and he has a site that I love called No Echo, focusing on hardcore, punk, metal, crossover, maybe some things in between. And he, I would say, is an authority on the subject. He happens to have some interviews that I was like, I always wanted an interview with this person, what happened to them. And they've always been around, but I just didn't have access to it. And he asked the questions and gets the answers that I want to hear. So we talk about music a lot. I don't really have many music people. Everyone probably on here likes music, but when the focus is somewhat music, I mean, we talk about other things. We talk about pizza, we talk about New York, you know, and we talk about music. And I tend to skip around a lot because I can become very, I don't know, become very excitable when it comes. I mean, I could talk about one band for, you know, an hour. So this is pretty exciting for me just to be able to talk about a subject I don't normally talk about. And I hope to bring more you know, people from bands of all genres, but, you know, specifically, you know, the hardcore scene, the metal scene, the punk scene. And so I'm hoping for more of that, you know, and that's pretty rock and roll, but it doesn't mean you can't dress it up. Talking about black tux, very excited. I'm waiting for my black tux order, the Belmont. Black tux has everything you need for special events, weddings, cool stuff that you want to post pictures of. You're like, look at me, I'm doing something cool. Black tux never gets too old because they have new and exciting styles. Yeah, I know. Listen, I don't have a lot of fancy stuff, but I know what I like when I see it. And if you are going for like a stylist selected outfit or you want to build a custom look, Black tux has tons of new suits and tuxedos to choose from for your big spring events. They're always changing up their looks, making it fun to try on different suits and tuxedos. Even if you have a suit, you got like that suit, switching it up with black tux is always a great idea. It makes it look, you look like, oh wow, this guy owns a lot of suits. And with the new fit algorithm, you don't have to awkwardly measure yourself or have a friend help you. They don't know what they're looking at either. The black tux does it for you. Plus, the black tux has a free home try-on that lets you see the fit and feel the quality of your suit months before your event. After ordering, your suit will arrive 14 days before your event. And remember, you got to remember how simple the returns are. It's key. Easy. You wear it, you turn heads, you look cool, and then you send it back 3 days after your event. Shipping is free both ways. Very easy. Stand out at your event for the right reasons with the Black Tux. And if you haven't checked out the Black Tux in a while, you're missing out. They got new complete looks and suit essentials for all your upcoming spring events and weddings. Look as great as your date. Your date looks good. Why don't you look good? To get $20 off your purchase, visit theblacktux.com/FWB. That's theblacktux.com/FWB for $20 off your purchase. The Black Tux, premium rental suits and tuxedos delivered. The stand-up comedy's been going pretty well, I guess, at least according to me. I don't know about the people watching it, but I have another show at Flappers in Burbank on a little date I like to call 420. Now, you don't know, if you know me or you don't know me, I'm not a 420 guy. Not that I have anything against it or it doesn't bother me. I don't feel like I have a lot to contribute to 420 based comedy. I don't even know if the show itself is like 420 based or it just happens to be on 420. Will I tell a 420 story or joke, yes, I have to. I have to honor it. I have to respect those three. If it was 311, I would do 311 based stuff. Are those different than each other? I don't know. I think they fit together pretty well, but I will honor that. I'm on 2 weeks with no soda, more specifically diet soda, because I wasn't drinking regular soda. I thought I was being healthy by just drinking diet soda. I mean, I knew it wasn't healthy. This has been 2 weeks. So is it not only no soda, but it's no aspartame. So it's not, you know, no diet iced teas or whatever. And I've been forcing myself, maybe like once a day, just to change it up, to drink like flavored spring water, whatever that it's. It doesn't taste very good. But I'm starting to get used to it. So it's been 2 weeks. Definitely feel a little bit better. Definitely less bloated. I knew that last time I quit soda. So a little less bloated. So that's good. Maybe a little bit. I get migraines, so a little less with the headaches. Nothing yet really to really report on that. I mean, yes, I definitely feel better because I'm drinking more water. So that's good. It's forcing me to do that, which is probably giving me less migraines because I wasn't drinking enough water. So I'm putting better things in my body, including RX bar. Yeah, I'm still eating RX bars. I have been for years. They're awesome. They're great. They have everything. That's an example of something that has really good ingredients, and the ingredients are right on the package. RX bars ingredients do all the talking. It's simply like eating 3 egg whites, 2 dates, and 6 almonds with no BS. It turns out real food ingredients actually taste really good, and they do taste good. I'm on a huge chocolate sea salt kick right now. Always into the berry ones, but right now I'm really into chocolate sea salt. It's like if you like sweet or savory, you're set. You're good. I like to mix it up, but right now it's chocolate sea salt. There's 11 flavors, so mix it up. It's 11 different flavors. You're going to find one or more that you like. It's gluten-free, soy-free, dairy-free, all the frees. It's got everything free that you want free. There's no added sugar, no artificial colors, artificial flavors, preservatives, or fillers. Egg whites for protein. This is very important to me. The quality of protein I have in a food bar, protein bar, powder. I'm very, very specific on what kind of protein it is. And egg white protein is good protein. Pre-workout, post-workout. I already eat eggs and egg whites, so it's giving me exactly what I want. Egg white protein stands out as a source of protein that is easy for your body to absorb. If you're not absorbing it, what's the point? And you could take it anywhere. A snack at the office, throw it in your bag for the plane, toss it in your backpack for a bike ride or hike. Doing a lot of spin bikes. I'm not biking outside. But yes, it applies. For 25% off your first order, visit rxbar.com/benefits and enter the promo code benefits. That's rxbar.com/benefits and enter the promo code benefits. All right, let's get into my conversation with Carlos Ramirez.
I like your Fred Perry jacket, by the way.
Thank you. I love Fred.
You like Fred Perry?
Yeah. I'm stereotypical. Hardcore guy.
Yeah, yeah. With
Fred Perry.
You button to the top, right?
No,
the
I
polos?
Don't.
You do polo to the top?
I don't polo to the top because I feel bloated.
Oh, yeah. No, I know.
Would. I think it looks cool.
It definitely, but it looks good if you're like a thin hot person.
You know,
looks great.
To bring it right to hardcore.
Yeah.
I mean, we already did, but
yeah.
Arthur from
He looks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He works at Fred Perry.
Oh, okay.
The retail end of it.
He doesn't just make millions on grill biscuits?
No, he has to have a job. And he always has beautiful Fred Perry stuff. I mean, it's not fair. He works there.
Yeah.
But he buttons it to the top, but he's thin.
Yeah. And he's tall and thin, yeah. And he looks. Yeah. No, I know. Trust me. I've seen pictures of myself, and my neck is just like, no. But I'm like, but come on. In my mind, I'm a thin person. My neck is like, no, you're short and fat. Don't do it.
Yeah.
But I was just in London for actually a past year for my honeymoon. Mm-hmm. And so it was like Fred Perry everywhere. I was just like, everything is so. But where do you get yours?
I get, I used to get it at Posers on Melrose.
Okay. Yeah, they have a pretty big, like.
Yeah, they do. And then. Just through the years from going to New York, I go to the outlet in New York, in Brooklyn.
Oh, okay.
They have an outlet, which is really good prices. And then
and it's real. It's real.
It's the real deal. Okay. Yeah, that's a thing because you don't want to get burned.
It's in Brooklyn, so it's got to be.
It's real. It's in the heart. I think it's in Williamsburg.
Okay.
And then I also a good place to go to Zappos. Believe it or not, if you from your phone, the Zappos app, and I find Fred Perry stuff there.
Good, but prices or
Good prices. Yeah. When I was a kid and I first encountered Fred Perry through Morrissey and hardcore, it was too expensive for me. Yeah. So
still is.
It's expensive still, yeah. But now as an adult, I can do it.
Right. You can justify.
Yeah. But that's like the fanciest stuff I have. Other than that, I just wear band t-shirts for the most part.
Right. Which are usually, why don't they make them more? Like, I know Revelation has a couple that are like, they have that soft style.
Yeah.
Why don't they just make more like that? Because they're not comfortable.
Yeah.
Do you have an in on that? I feel like you have an in on everything.
I don't know why. Yeah. It's got to be some financial thing. I will say, though, that bands will send me t-shirts now that I do the website. And some of the shirts, it all depends. Some people are Gildan people, Fruit of the Loom, American Apparel. Some of them are like, when I put them on my belly, it looks like it's like I'm stretching out like pantyhose material.
You know what
I mean? It's like nylon. So
we need Fred Perry Spanx, man.
Yeah.
Got to get them out there.
Yeah.
Got to get them. So you're from New York.
Queens, New York.
Born
in Jackson Heights in Queens. Jackson Heights, the home of Civ and Anthony from Killing Time.
Yeah. Wait, where's the Ramones from?
Ramones are from, they went to Forest Hills High School.
Right.
And
they're from Queens, but they're not.
They're from Queens, Forest Hills, Kew Gardens.
Yeah.
So people from Queens and Brooklyn, we're obnoxious because we always tell you within a few minutes of meeting you, like, I'm from Queens.
Sure.
We're very specific, or I'm not from Manhattan.
Yeah.
And actually, I was talking to Sammy from, New York hardcore drummer extraordinaire the other day. And I was saying, you're one of the few people that's actually from New York City, Manhattan. New York City. It's usually people from the outer boroughs. But I'm from Queens and rich hardcore history there.
Yeah.
A lot of people came from there. Walter from Gorilla Biscuits.
Was living in Queens, did that actively influence you? Was it after the fact that you were like, oh, all these people are from Queens? Or was it because you were in Queens that you got exposed to a lot of stuff?
I think because I lived there, in the 80s. I'm 43. So in the 80s, it was a great time because hip hop was happening. It was brand new. And I came in through hardcore, through metal. That's my first, love, heavy metal. And so when I got into hardcore, it was cool because it's like the thing everyone always says, like with punk rock, these people were just like me. They weren't, virtuoso musicians. And when they finished their set, they were right next to me, standing on the street waiting, to like go to the cars or whatever, or go to the subway even.
The stage, the audience, the street was all like one thing. Yeah.
Yeah. And coming from heavy metal, where I would go to clubs, even really young at L'Amour and Ritz and all these other clubs, there was separation with the metal bands where they had the bus and it was like, they had the groupies.
But that was part of the magic, though.
It was.
I mean? Like Motley Crue, I'd like Shout the Devil when I was a kid and I would just like stare at the album cover, like Stay Hungry or whatever. Yeah. And I'd be like, this is mad. Like, I didn't want it to be. I didn't want you to be like
Absolutely.
Me because I didn't think I was cool. I was like, I wanted you to be separate. With hardcore, it was kind of like, oh, yeah, you're just like a regular. You probably have as much talent as I do, and I don't even know if I play or not, know?
Yeah, and that was it. It was, for me, it wasn't punk rock. It was hardcore where I found that. Some people talked about, maybe a little younger than me, where it was where the grunge scene, where these bands look like me, whatever. But for me, it was hardcore. And then, I found out that a lot of them were from near me, Queens. That wasn't the reason why I got into it. It was just kind of being in the right place at the right time. I think that a lot of times people in the outer boroughs, Queens, Brooklyn, Staten Island, Bronx, there's like this stigma. People in Manhattan have this like thing, well, we're really the New Yorkers. We're from Manhattan. And you're the outer boroughs, as they say.
Where does Long Island fit in?
I mean, that's if people think Queens is uncool, Long Island is way uncool because Long Island is, further out from Queens. But Long Island is where people from Queens move to when they make it as adults and they buy a house, that's where they go. That's the suburbs. It's like where I live now. I live in Sherman Oaks.
Right.
You know, people, like young people, don't want to live in Sherman Oaks because it's super uncool. But that's where you kind of, well, I want to go buy a house and settle down and have kids.
Right.
I'm
going to
go
move
to Sherman Oaks.
I think even celebrities, as far as I know, it's like you know, Studio City or Encino or, you know, they, when you don't want to be there, but you're close enough.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's not, it's Long Island, but, you know, Long Island, I think it's that perfect kind of thing where the suburbs and boredom really, good music comes out of that. You know?
Well, you know, it's interesting because you, you know, you are from New York and you moved out to Los Angeles.
Yeah.
Like me. I mean, I'm from New Jersey originally, you know, the Bergen County area, you know. And then, you know, at a pretty young, like 10 or whatever, I moved with my family to the Orange County area, which is Newburgh, Poughkeepsie.
Yeah.
I say Newburgh out here. You know where Newburgh is, right?
My wife's from Poughkeepsie.
Oh, your wife's from Poughkeepsie. But you know where Newburgh is.
Absolutely.
All right. Anywhere I go, if I'm like, oh, yeah, Newburgh, which is a pretty big, I mean, it's always been like the top 10, like, per capita crime, you know, kind of place. It's, like, it's a pretty iconic, but I'm like, do you know Poughkeepsie? And everyone seems to know Poughkeepsie, but no one seems to know Newburgh.
Yeah, and people in hardcore and heavy metal know Poughkeepsie from the Chance.
Chance, oh, yeah.
Yeah, right. So,
which is where I saw my first, like, name hardcore show, which would be Murphy's Law. And then I think my... That would probably be either 89 or 90, but definitely 89. I saw a band called AWOL, which was a local band, which they, at the very end of it, Mike from All Out War, the singer from All Out War, sang for them. And I think in a weird way, I mean, they might disagree, but in a weird way, it didn't really turn into All Out War, but that was kind of like the locale of that is how.
Okay.
So that would be like my first show is 89, and then my first like name show would be either 89 or 90, Murphy's Law at the Chance.
Okay, yeah.
Which I, you know, remember really fondly.
Yeah, my wife, who's not into hardcore, but she loves...
Which is probably it's probably, like, you know what I mean? It'd be a bit much, right?
I think so. Some people think it's great because, oh, we go to shows together and everything. I like the separation of it. But she loves Type O Negative, which is strange because it's just nothing else kind of... Yeah. That she likes is like Type O Negative, but they were big at the Chance because they did a Halloween show every year.
They played in Newburgh a lot at this place called the Avalon. It was a skate park. It was like Life of Agony and Type O Negative played together there at the skate park all the time.
Yeah. What other bands are from that area?
Newburgh?
I always think of All Out War immediately.
There's All Out War. As far as, I can't, I mean, there's like a lot of like bands. There's a band called Drowning Room that was
kind
I don't know if you know Sean. He's a singer. He's been trying. He's from there, and he lives out here now. It's just like one of those things where people live out here now. There's a band called Joshua that were on Doghouse Records that not. Yeah. And I was friends. You know what I mean? We all went to high school together.
Yeah.
I mean, summer school, and we'd like a lot of those dudes really like turned me on to like bands I never like Gorilla Biscuits. Like Sean turned me on, brought me the tape, and I was just like, you know, before that I was like Clash, and then you know Clash is very. I was like you know Smiths and whatever and like Beastie Boys, but then I was like, oh, what's you know what is like a Suicidal Tendencies album or you know Youth of Day that I just bought in Jersey at a Can't Close My Eyes just because I was like this looks cool.
Yeah,
put it in the tape deck for my dad in the mall like down there. I was like 14 or whatever, and he was like, take this away. I never want to hear this again. And I was like, I'm onto something.
Yeah,
I felt like. Yeah. But did you meet your wife in New York?
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
I met her when I was still living in Queens, and she was going to school at NYU, finishing, and we met through MyScace.
Okay.
You know, to kind of date it.
Yeah.
She was friends of someone I was friends with.
I'm only 20, so listen, or maybe barely 21 right now, so I don't even know what MyScace is.
Well, I mean, to further date myself, I was on Friendster.
Yeah.
Before that, remember that? But yeah, so we met through that. So it wasn't through the hardcore scene or anything like that. But
she got in your top eight though, right?
She was.
She got in your top eight there.
Yes. And you know, we're still together through Facebook and through Instagram. We're every social media we're you know, rolling with the punches.
Yeah. I mean when you met her, were you in the city and she was in the city too.
She was living right by the Palladium, in like Union Square.
Yeah,
and I was living in Queens, and she was volunteering at this animal shelter in Brooklyn. So we would hang out in Brooklyn, and it was, I mean, I'm almost 8 years older than her, so she was finishing college, and I was already kind of over hanging out and doing that kind of stuff,
sure.
like hanging out at bars and all that. So I was kind of like, well, maybe it's not going to work because I'm already kind of like boring and I'd rather just hang out at home.
Yeah.
But her personality worked for that. She's fine with that. So yeah, we moved out here together in 2006 and, yeah, she works in television. So
I should have her. I'm sitting here. I was like, I wish she was here right now.
Yeah.
Because I could be talking to her about how can you help my career? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, and that, isn't that really what it's all about?
She could help your career more than I could.
Right.
You know, unless
right.
you're in a hardcore band or something.
Yeah.
There's that much.
No, yeah. but you have, like, you're, that's what I want to ask you.
Because yeah.
I'm actually a year older than you.
Mm-hmm.
So been around the block for a year longer. What was your first show? Like, what was your first? How about this? What was your first? I don't have really many music people in here. Everyone mm-hmm. likes music, but mm-hmm. music isn't really like the kind of impetus of it.
Yeah.
What was your first like show or concert? And then what was your first like hardcore? If they were different.
Well, the first concert I went to was Menudo.
Okay.
Remember them?
Oh yeah.
I had older cousins who were into Menudo, and so it was 1981, so I was six. That was my first concert experience. And then the first one where I picked, where I wanted to go see the artist was Michael Jackson.
Okay.
And then for rock, it was Metallica and Ozzy. And that
What year was that?
86, I think it was. And I was fortunate enough where I had my next-door neighbor, Steven, he was 3 years older, and his parents were really cool, and they would just drive us to the Nassau Coliseum on Long Island when we went to see Ozzy.
I saw Duran Duran there, so I think
yeah.
I've seen Duran Duran at Nassau. I think.
Oh, nice.
So,
yeah,
and I think Depeche Mode. So
okay.
I think that
I saw Depeche Mode there too. Yeah.
Was it?
It was the one. It was with the opening. It was Songs of Faith and Devotion. Yeah.
It was awesome. I saw it was Jesus and Mary Chain and Nitzer Ebb on
nice.
The probably Violator tour.
Yeah.
Or right before, yeah, probably like
yeah,
Violator.
Violator. Yeah, so Ozzy, Metallica was the first rock or heavy metal. And then the first hardcore show was at Lemoore in Brooklyn. And it was Biohazard before they were signed. And then Leeway, they had Born to Expire out. And then Exodus was a headliner. And Leeway just was amazing, and it was scary.
Yeah.
And back then you would take the subway from Queens to Bay Ridge, where the club was in Brooklyn, and it would take like 2.5 hours. It was something stupid like that. But I was 14, and you know there was the
yeah,
subway.
Time
was
wasn't like really
no.
the same thing. The excitement of
didn't care.
Yeah.
And you would get to a show. And you remember this when you'd go to a show when you were really young, you'd get there right when it opened. You don't want to miss any opening
yeah.
bands.
Now it's kind of like, who's
yeah.
opening?
Yeah.
I want to see the times that
yes.
people are going, which I appreciate it.
Does
but
that
yeah.
happen in comedy? Are there people, are there openers where people are like, I don't want to go see them?
Or
I've seen them too many times, same material.
Sometimes you don't know, though, when like people are going. But yeah, I think like the Comedy Store will have that kind
yeah.
of thing. Yeah.
But you guys don't have merch in that world.
No. There's a lot of like filming. There's no merch. There's no, I mean, there's not something very cool.
Yeah.
To have like some, you know, comedy.
Because I remember at Rev Fest last year, people were like, "I'm getting there early because I want to make sure that I get a T-shirt, like
oh.
a certain T-shirt."
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Sell out sizes.
Well, I think, you know, I just saw it was interesting just to skip around. I saw Misfits, in Vegas, their thing, and then I saw I don't know if it was there or it was there, and then whatever's happening, it would happen in L.A. But there was an early time to get merch.
Oh.
It was like, yeah, some weird thing that you could go. There was a separate, almost like a separate thing separate from the show. Because it is kind of, can be kind of like a pain to, you know, you have the show, you got to carry all the stuff
yes.
or whatever. I mean, their merch was pretty terrible. Misfit stuff, considering they were like probably one of the best branded
yeah.
things out there. It was really bad.
Ooh.
Just corny. You know what
yeah.
I mean? Like just not cool.
Yeah.
That is part of like the excitement of like, you know, like fanzines as people still buying fanzines
yeah.
or, you know, people's record collections and
yeah.
stuff like that. Yeah, yours. My first concert was Whitesnake in 1987.
Nice.
Not bad.
Yeah.
Middletown, New York. I mean, it's, you know, it's not Menudo or it's not Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
I wish it was. And then, like I said, it was just like, yeah, it was just like this man AWOL and then Murphy's Law would was probably 89, because, you know, in that area, and I was like, you know, probably first got into like punk or hardcore in like 88, mm-hmm. so I was a little bit, you know, a little bit behind. When you were the band, you were in Black Army Jacket.
It's a Black Army Jacket, yeah.
Which I mean, you know, a lot of bands are in the peripheral for me. Mm-hmm. Now, it was like bands like that and like 97A. Was that part of your kind of world? I don't know why I put you guys together.
We played with them.
Yeah, maybe so I saw you on flyers.
Yeah. They were part of that like fast, like youth crew kind of hardcore revival thing.
And you were more like Power Violence.
Yeah, yeah.
Which was never really my, you know, I just never.
Yeah.
It just never got into my thing, but from just going to shows in New York, like, you know, mm-hmm. I don't know if you guys played Wetlands or wherever.
We played in New York City proper. We played CB's, Coney Island High.
Coney Island High, that's probably I saw a lot of. I went a lot of shows at Coney Island High.
But mostly in New York, and I always tell people this, that New York, so we were around in 95, 96, that people didn't really care too much in New York for that kind of music. It was more still hardcore, like VOD.
Right, yeah.
That
groovy,
was huge.
Like groove,
yeah,
like
yeah.
Life of Agony, probably a little bit, yeah.
Which I love,
yeah,
but,
me too, yeah.
But we didn't do that. So for us, the West Coast was always better. So we'd come out here, we'd fly out here, and then just do like a run of like a week or two or whatever with bands from out here. The only time really on the East Coast where we did well was when Spaz came out, who were this big band from the Bay Area. And they flew out, or they toured the States, and we did the run, like a lot of the East Coast dates with them. And it was, people really came out for that. But other than that, it was, you know, playing CBs and a couple hundred people maybe, if that. So it was a lot of, you know, people romanticize the past and, you know.
Sometimes not as.
I was there. It was okay. You know, it wasn't great. Now, again, if you were a band like VOD or. Who are other bands from that time period? VOD were from Long Island. Not even Glassjaw yet, because Glassjaw was still kind of developing over there. But yeah, more of the hardcore, metallic hardcore did better. We were, you know, fast, short songs and that kind of thing.
Earth Crisis was still probably.
Yeah, Earth Crisis. And I love all that, you know, obviously. If you know No Echo, I love that era of hardcore. There's not really any era of hardcore I don't like. I'm not too picky, which I get crap for sometimes from my older friends, friends my age.
Yeah.
Like, new hardcore. And I'm like, oh, there's a lot of great new hardcore bands. And they're just like, oh, I've heard it, seen it before. That's a ripoff of so-and-so. And
but everything is kind
of derivative. That's what I think, you know. It was for Black Army Jacket, we didn't really fit into that. So it wasn't great for us in, you know, home, but out here it was good. It was West Coast.
What was it? So, you know, the first time I've been to California is when I left New York and moved mm-hmm. to San Diego. Never been to California, just mm-hmm. our friend San Diego before I moved to LA. It was like 2002. What was your, like, opinion coming from New York and then going? Was it like, and because now you live here, so mm-hmm. you have, like, kind of something to compare it to.
I was always obsessed with TV shows and movies and entertainment and. And
it's magic, right?
It's magic. I still love it, and I work in it now, and I still love it. I think that when my view of California, of Southern California, was told through Thrasher magazine and photos and videos from skateboard, skateboard companies would release back then. So it was very, you know, everyone lives in Venice and Santa Monica, and everyone's
cool hair.
Yeah, everyone's got Tony Hawk hair. It's cool and laid back. Or the movie, Gleaming the Cube, you know, Thrashing, Rad, all that, you know, that kind of, everyone's just, you know, outdoorsy and beachy and cool. And then people thought New York was like the Warriors or like Escape from New York, where it was like the South Bronx, everything's on fire and gangs. So I had that in my mind. But when I first came out to California, was on tour in the mid-90s, and I think the other guys in my band were like, it's okay. I loved it, you know.
Yeah.
I was like, this is great. Very anti-New York thing to say. A lot of New Yorkers are very like, LA is so plastic and phony and whatever. And I think a lot of people in New York are like that too, though.
It's like people are rude here and there. It's like everyone's rude.
Yeah.
There's good pizza everywhere. I mean, there's bad pizza everywhere. There's good pizza everywhere. It's like, you know, these are, you know. It's,
yeah. Where we live in Sherman Oaks, we have Mulberry Street Pizza, which is very.
It's great.
Yeah.
Mulberry Street's great.
Yeah. very East Coasty.
It's very good. And I've eaten pizza in Brooklyn, and I was like, this isn't very good. It just happened. You know what
Some
I mean?
Some people think New Jersey has the best pizza.
It does.
You think so, right?
Yeah. Just from growing up, it's always been the most consistent. I mean, I can only speak mostly for like that Bergen County area, but most of those people, you know, people like my dad, I think, was born in the Bronx or whatever.
Yeah.
People, you can't afford, you move out or whatever, you go to New Jersey.
Yeah.
People in New Jersey can't afford to whatever, you start moving, whatever, you go to the, you know, Rockland County or whatever. And then you can't afford that, because I went to community college in Rockland County. Then you go to Orange County. And then eventually, just like here, you know, you go into the Valley, now you're in Van Nuys, now you're in, who knows, you know, where you are. But they take that with, it's not like a new country, it's, they take that with them.
Yeah.
So it's, it makes sense.
People are passionate about pizza.
Yeah.
Like really, and when I remember like a few years ago on Facebook, I just posted some status, you know, like I commented something about pizza, or I asked, deep dish, how do you people feel about deep dish? And all my New York friends are like, fuck that. Deep dish is bullshit. You know,
people from Chicago were like,
yeah, yeah. Like then my other friends were like, are you kidding me? You know, blah, blah, blah. New York pizza is too thin. And, but people are really passionate about it. And so much so that I interviewed the guys from Anthrax, or two of them, Scott, Ian, and Charlie Benante. And, this is when I worked at Huffington Post AOL, and I was producing video content for them, and I had them come in, and I didn't want to ask them about their new album, cause that's boring.
Yeah, they probably heard that.
They don't give a shit about that. So I said, let's talk about pizza. What do you think about that, you know, idea? And they're like, yeah, let's do it. And I'm telling you, it was one of the most viewed pieces, because they were talking. They listed all these places in L.A. and New York that they loved. People were like offended that they didn't say certain pizzeria. You know,
it's when somebody lists like the top 10 albums or something. It's like, you left off with it. It's like, well, you can list every single album. At that point.
Yeah.
What when you were going to move, was it like when you were like going to move to LA, was it just like I want to move to LA? Was there just opportunities out here for you and your wife?
She worked for Judith Regan, this book publisher. And so Judith Regan did all the rock star books at the time, like Marilyn Manson and, you know, Dave Navarro's like drug book and Nikki Sixx, all these Jenna Jameson, all the porn stuff. She did all the books that were for people who don't read books normally.
Right.
Right. And my wife was an editor there. So they moved out here because they wanted to be where the celebrities were and really branch, get that branch of the company bigger. And so they moved out here. But the problem was, within the first few months, she did a book with O.J. Simpson called If I Did It.
I've heard.
Yeah. And
is she the editor on that book?
No, she didn't work hands-on on that book. But it was a disaster. And people wanted Judith Regan's head. So basically, the company that owned Regan Books kicked her to the curb. They, you know, and they offered to move my wife back and me back to New York and work for the parent company. But my wife, you know, said, you know what, let's just stay here and figure it out. There's no publishing really compared to New York here, book publishing. So she started working in television as an assistant, kind of starting from the bottom, and then she's worked her way up. But yeah, we came here because of her job. I didn't have a job, so I had to find one when we got out here.
Yeah, which is, yeah, I mean, in LA, not having a job is like, is the new having a job, I guess. Not that I would know. How would I know that? Very employable Jason Horton, everybody. Doing a podcast. Were you excited to move out here? Were you apprehensive?
Yes. No, she called me, and and I said yes right away. I didn't think. I was like,
how long before? You know, I'm just kind of comparing your
we were out 3 weeks later.
Yeah.
3 weeks later, we were out.
Was there any, would you have any, like, were you romanticizing it even before this kind of came to be? Were you just like, oh, I'd love to live in, like, LA or something?
I wanted to. I didn't think I would ever do it because I don't think I'd still be there if it weren't for her. Yeah. Meaning that we pushed each other to do it.
Yeah.
My friends are so ingrained, like they're ingrained into the New York thing with family. And my friends had kids in their 20s. I didn't have kids until my late 30s. Yeah. So they were already, you know, all my, you know, their support system for their kids was already there. So
it makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. And so to me, it was a pipe dream, you know, but I lived in New York. It wasn't like that bad.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I love New York. So I was like, if I stay here the rest of my life, I'm fine. Great, I love it here. Yeah. You know, it wasn't like I was in I don't know, I'm not going to say someplace and offend someone.
Yeah.
You know, somewhere else in the country where I might not be happy. So, but it was because of her job that we moved out here. And they paid for everything. So that made it much more. Doable. Yeah.
Would you always live in the Valley or?
No, we lived in Santa Monica for the first like 7 years.
How'd you like that?
We loved it, especially coming from New York. You know, yeah. We live by the beach. We could walk to the beach. Yeah. And people would come visit, and they were like, oh, my God, this is so different from New York. Yeah, it was.
And it's again, not Coney Island.
Right. Well, it was also going back to I was saying how I was always, as a kid, into television, big into Three's Company.
I knew you were going
to. And it was like, oh, the Regal Beagle was here.
Yeah, and their apartment. Like, I'm a very big into, like what landmarks mm-hmm. were from TV shows.
Yes.
What's his name? Danny, I think it's Danny from House of Pain, has this thing called Delta Burger. Which I'm fascinated with that whole thing. And I do the same thing. Like, I went to London.
He bought the house from Christmas Story.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I'm just a huge kind of fan of that. But, you know, growing up, it's like when people ask me what got me into comedy, it was I wanted to be Jack Tripper.
Nice.
Because he was, good-looking guy, but he wasn't so good-looking, and he was a dork, but he fell over stuff, but women seemed to want to be around him still, but he wasn't like super threatening, and I was just like, I want to be that, you know. Between that and then the State that was on MTV, which I used to go to tapings at NYU, that's when I was like, nah, I want to do this. But as soon as you said Santa Monica, because they're at the Santa Monica Zoo, and I was like, it must be so cool to have a bar like right under you. Yeah. But now that when I think about it now, it's like I would never want that. I mean, I live in the Atwater Village area, and there's bars everywhere, and I'm not a big drink. You know what I mean? Yeah. I just don't whatever. And it's not a nightmare, but like living unless you're single, even then it's kind of like I don't want to be around all these people.
Right.
But think about that. It's like wow, you can just leave your apartment, go downstairs, and sit in a nice round booth, and go on like a date, and like girls like be interested in you or fighting over you. That's mad. Like, but I always thought that was something. Like somebody else did, and I was only meant to watch it. And then I've worked and met with and auditioned with and done projects with people where I was like, I've watched you on TV or movies my whole life, and now we're like talking about stuff.
Yeah.
It's very, I mean, I'm sure with music and music, or and you know, you're in the entertainment world too. It's kind of like, no, I watched you on MTV. Like, we're talking about things, you know, we're talking about pizza now.
Yeah.
well, super magical.
The Jack Tripper connection continues with me because with John Ritter, right?
Yeah.
I blanked for a second. My father-in-law knew him, and they were friends in the 70s in New York. My father-in-law was a professor at Columbia at the time, and he knew like artsy-fartsy people, and somehow Ritter was part of that somehow. And they went, and I always remember this, they went to go see The Shining together when it came out in theater. So my father-in-law and Jack Tripper, essentially.
I should have had him in here.
Yes.
And he's
British.
I got all the wrong people in
the
here.
The wrong people.
You're only mentioning the more interesting people,
which is bad.
You shouldn't do that.
I know. But, yes, and then the other connection real quick was recently I work in TV production or video production, and I went to go shoot something for an animal shelter. That Kaylee Coco or Cuckoo?
I think so. Yeah,
I don't know. She's really passionate about. So she had us over her house, beautiful house, as expected. She worked on that show where he died.
Yeah,
actually.
Yeah. 10 ways.
Reasons to date my daughter. Don't date my daughter.
Yeah,
and she was really nice. And I didn't ask her about him, but there was a photo there of him, and it
makes me. I mean, it's like an emotional thing.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, I love. Yeah, I mean, he's.
He was like, my mom used to say that my mom, who's an immigrant from South America, but she loved American television from the golden era or whatever. And she always used to say that Jack Tripper, the character, was like Dick Van Dyke, because he was so physical and he'd walk into the room and fall. And it was just always so funny.
Yeah. He's controversial, but in a way, but he wasn't, he was like kind of do no harm. And he would... You know, the women like were like, I hate you, but I need to be around you. And I was just like, how do I like I want to be like I just it just resonated with me like a really young age. I don't know. That's like my first thing about being a guy and being like, I want to be like I'm, you know, that's like a rock star to me.
Yeah.
I just thought it was
definitely
great.
You weren't into Larry because Larry was like the scumbag.
No. And like... I just felt it was really just. But now looking back at Larry, I was like, Larry's pretty. He's really edgy. You know what I mean? He really pushed it. So when you kind of like being out here. Mm. And going, I mean, for me in New York, going to shows, that's all I did. Because I did a fanzine. I did all that kind of stuff. So I did a lot of, like, got passes and, like, into every single, like, Coney Island High. I would go to, like, every single, you know what I mean? Went to, like, a Secret Social Distortion show. I got invited to, like, the Sex Pistols reunion. It was, like, great. But out here in L.A., it's kind of like, oh, what's the parking like? I'm so tired. Like, did that change for you? Like, did, like, you know, the lifestyle kind of change?
Yeah, I don't go to shows as much as I used to. And that's, you know, I have two young kids at home and... a lot of times, it's childcare. You know, who's gonna be with them physically in this house? You know, if I'm at the show and she's working, she travels a lot with work, my wife. It has to be convenient now. So yeah, the parking comes into question. I'm actually presenting in quotes a show in June, and it's in Orange County. And anyone who
is that Fireburn?
Fireburn show, yeah. And it's a great show, but it's in Orange County. Yeah. So it's a Friday. So I'm already thinking about it. And it's in June.
Yeah.
So I'm already like, what should I do that Friday? Do I leave? You know, it's like that skit on SNL.
Yeah.
The Californian.
Yeah. Do I take the, you know, take the five and then.
Yeah. It's that
605.
Cliche.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it takes a lot for me to get out to a show now. I don't have the hardcore buddy near me.
What you need?
Yeah. I do.
It's like a gym buddy, you know.
Yeah,
it's like you're not.
They motivate you, right?
Yeah.
They you feel bad letting them down, so you go. So I need that. Andrew from Strife lives near me, but he lives with his girlfriend, and they don't have kids, so it's a different kind of vibe. You know what I mean? It's like, so it's hard for me to kind of like work my way into like finding someone who's married with kids who's gonna understand. And also wants to go to shows and support the scene.
But you know, obviously the internet has, you know, for me, it's like, I probably listen to more hardcore now than I did only because the internet makes it so available. Like, it reminds me of things that I used to like. It introduces me to some new things. And it's just kind of, it's always there. So I'm listening to more, but I'm going to less, less involved, you know? But is that how No Echo kind of came about? Was it something like,
Well, it was a friend of mine who did a site called Aversion. He was a blog where he would just post like old hardcore and metal like demos and 7-inch stuff from the 90s, especially. For example, like Bulldoze or Neglect, something like that. And people would chime in, and he would upload the songs, so people would download it. This was, you know, early on when MP3s. Where, you know, that was like a new thing.
You download Mediafire.
Exactly. And Andrew did that site Aversion. And then he kind of like stopped doing it. He didn't update it frequently, which is a very common thing in this kind of music. You see a cool website or a blog, whatever, and then like a few weeks later, it's not updated, and then you stop going to it. So we became friends, and I just said to him one day, I never met him in person. I didn't even know what he looked like. And I emailed him and I said, hey, we should do a website. And then we started No Echo in 2004. And the idea was to have all kinds of music.
So you started in New York?
No, I lived here. So we moved here, did I say 2004?
Yeah.
2014.
Okay.
Sorry,
2014. So I was like, wow, I just got, it's been around for a
while. No, 2014.
2014.
Beginning
of
2014.
Yeah.
So, and Andrew does web development. So it was, you know, we had a leg up that way. We didn't have to spend money on that. But the idea was to do not only hardcore, heavy metal, but everything that we like. And we both love really random kinds of music, what people call yacht rock. Huge into that.
What is an example of that?
Would be like Michael McDonald's solo material.
Okay. Huey Lewis. Would it be
I like Huey Lewis, but that's not really that wheelhouse. It would be kind of like smooth jazz.
Okay.
And like AM music.
Okay.
You know, like
yeah.
One hit wonders.
Okay.
So we were covering that kind of stuff on the site, believe it or not, next to, you know, a hardcore Converge or something. It was crazy. But it was like my dream and his dream. Like, this is great. This is exactly what we like in a website kind of form. The problem was we couldn't find an audience because people don't want that. They want to go to a website knowing what they're going to get out of it.
Well, that's the more narrow you can – broad to get a lot of people, but narrow to, you know, so people know what they're getting.
Yes.
Is the secret.
Yes. So we started – so then what happened was with time, some contributors came in. My friend Freddie from New York – Freddie Alva, he wrote some stuff that really got a lot of traction, and people started coming. So yeah, people would come and then say, "Oh, there's not enough hardcore in here. I'm not interested." With time last year, Andrew lost interest. He wanted to go back to his site, and what I did was I said, "All right, I'll continue it on my own, but I'm going to really narrow focus it to mostly hardcore," and it's helped. It's done. It's the site's doing better than ever. I can feel it. I don't go in to check traffic often, but when I do, it's like, wow, every month it gets better.
And that would you say that's happened? I mean, just curious, yeah. As somebody who, like, you know, makes content. Has made a living on the internet, is it are people finding it just kind of organically? Because I know, like, or you'll post it on your Facebook page.
Yeah.
Right? There's only so many times you could do that before
right.
people are like, yeah, we get it. So is your kind of thing, like, because of the volume of content and it's indexing on Google, whatever the case may be. So how is it growing?
Word of mouth.
Yeah.
Because what happens is I get people who write me from bands or labels, small labels. When I say label, it's like a guy, you know. It's not a record company. But and it's always, I found so-and-so posted something, and I like your site. So it is word of mouth. I don't run any ads on the site.
That's what I was curious. I noticed you didn't run any.
I don't run any ads. I would love to make money on it. I'm not above that. I would love to. The problem is that the heavy metal kind of websites, that like my size websites, they run through networks.
Yeah.
So you'll go on the website and you'll see ads for stuff that doesn't really make sense.
Like, I look at Blabbermouth. For some reason, I like Blabbermouth. I don't know why, but I just do.
Yeah.
But they have. Yeah, I know. I understand. Yeah, it's like
it's just like a hodgepodge of stuff.
Yeah.
And the truth is that hardcore, there's no money in it. So there's Deathwish Records or Deathwish Inc. There's Revelation. There's a few record labels that are actual functioning, you know, with employees, record labels, but they don't really have money to like or want to spend money on advertising online. So my thing is, I spend a lot of time on it, a lot of time on NoEcho, and I don't make any money on it. And some people would think that's crazy. Why would you do that? And I've had people that I've talked to recently who are like, you got to put ads on there, you got to make some money on it, like that's not, you know, that's not smart. But I just don't think about it. You know, I make my living somewhere else, so I don't need to worry about it that much, I guess.
And plus, like, it keeps the integrity, maintains the integrity of the thing, where you don't have it clouded by ads. Are a huge turnoff.
It is. And what happens, and I used to work in digital marketing for record labels. What happens is they'll do an ad buy, and then they start pressuring you to cover their bands, and I don't want
to. On podcasts, they're fine, though, just to be clear. And maybe even this one, it's totally fine to have.
No, I'm talking about banner ads, where Amazon, like, I've been on websites for, you know, heavy metal and punk websites where it's an ad for, like, something for, like, senior citizens.
Yeah.
And it's, like, totally it's doesn't just, make any sense.
It's not discerning.
Yeah.
Like, you have, you have a nice cross-section of interviews. You have, like, things. The things that I'm most interested in are usually the things of the kind of, I don't say nostalgic, but the things of, like, the old school. Like, Tim Chung's from Token Entry, which I was just like, I think I may have mentioned, like, you had interviews and answered questions of things that I've searched the internet for.
Yeah.
I'm just very, like, I wanted to know about, like, Uniform Choice.
Yeah.
Because it was during this weird time, which was, like, past my time, but then I got to staring at the sun, and I was like, what's the deal with all this? Like, it's like, what's the deal with, like, some of these things? And then also you had, I got turned on, I think, my buddy Matt Weider, which we went to, you know, shows together back in the day and stuff like that, which I thought was really, really cool. I think you might have caught wind of it. When you're doing interviews, have there been any that you haven't gotten yet that you want?
Yeah.
I'm skipping around. But
yeah, that's okay. I want to interview Pat DeBar from Uniform
Choice. Okay, that's something I wanted.
Yeah. There's nothing.
Trust me, I search. Like, I'll sit there and I'll be like, "There's got to be." And I find like a random photo or like a random video.
Yeah.
But I was like, "I want. I don't care if he doesn't want to tell. I want to know."
Right.
Right. And I think that's how a lot of people are. Do you have any like just out of curiosity? Do you have any like why he doesn't talk to some? You know.
No, I know that he was in Tony Rettman, who did the Straight Edge book.
Yeah.
Pat's in that book. He interviewed Pat, and I've. There's a lot of different people I've talked to that are like can literally text him right now, and I just haven't pushed it.
Yeah,
I think I will get Pat Dubar to do an interview, but that's definitely my. I don't know if it's maybe it might be my top one. There are people that I will interview, but I feel like they've been interviewed so many times that it's not. I like you're saying, like I like getting the Tim Chunks of the world.
Yeah,
because there's a lot of trivia to mine from. And it is, for me, it is about those trivia kind of things. Like, oh man, like, you know, are you in that Facebook group where it's like fellow old people that, you know, all we do is complain about hardcore?
No, but it should be, right?
Yeah, I'll add you.
Add me, please.
It's a 90s group and it's a lot of musicians. I won't say who they are.
Yeah.
Cause it's a very private thing. So we talk trash, but they're, you know, someone will post something like Bad Brains. Rise album, for example, that album's garbage. And someone's like, no, it's a sleeper, man. Give it a chance, you know, and that kind of thing. So I like to have, you know, interviews where those kinds of questions or that kind, those kinds of topics, like, hey, I've always wanted to know, why didn't you, or who's the person on the cover of this record?
Yeah.
You know, those kinds of things, because that's the kind of stuff I live for, you know, leave the other interviews for like the, tell me about the new album. I don't care about that.
Yeah. Like Metal Hammer. I don't know, whatever.
The stock questions.
Yeah.
I always ask about their childhood. I want to get, you know, I do it chronologically and I want to get some, find out how'd you get into hardcore? How'd you get into, was it through metal? Cause a lot of people got like me through metal and then hardcore. I ask those kinds of questions, but I also want to get those trivia things, the stuff that I always wondered about, you know? And sometimes the answers are disappointing because a person will be like, oh, yeah, it was just this. It's just some random fact. It wasn't like a lot of meaning to it.
Yeah.
But I still, now I feel like I know now for a fact.
Do you, and I get, you probably, I don't know, you couldn't get it like from the singer, obviously, when you find out who it is, but I don't know. And this is something I probably would just ask you on the side, anyone would ask. What is up with the self-titled Warzone album?
Well, that's something.
Can you do something on it, I guess?
Yeah, I can. I reached out to the drummer on that album because he played with Sick of It All for a while as well. And I didn't get a response. Now, a lot of times, not only people, like I say, you know, we're in our 40s, in our early 40s, we're old. But some of these guys are like pushing 50.
Yeah.
And they're clueless when it comes to social media.
And how to connect with them.
Yeah. And they have a page up that like their daughter or someone put up for them and they don't know. So I've had people that respond to me a year and a half later. Hey, I just saw this message on my Facebook. I would love to do an interview, you know? So I reached out to the drummer from the Warzone album, the one in question. And because I will ask him, you know, what they were thinking, what was up with that? Because it's horrible. It's a horrible album.
You know, I listen
and I
to
like
a lot,
horrible albums.
I know. So I love horrible albums.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
I really do. I like Alpha Omega. I don't care.
Yeah.
It's very bad, but I feel like there's good songs in there. They just don't sound good.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like, I feel like, I was like, oh, I feel like if there was a different version of this, not even to take away, you can even keep some of like the, but it sounds like somebody just went in and were like, hey.
Yeah.
Is it just Ray and a bunch of other people, or is there people from Warzone on it or from the other albums? Or
I think they're all new guys.
Yeah.
I think they were just for that one album.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure.
I would just love to know like how that came to be. And then I heard there was like Warzone that dancers at some of their shows. Like I've just read so many things and it was just, I don't know. It was just one of those things in time where I figured you would know. And then you posted you talked to Jordan from Revelation about the Slipknot album.
Right.
Are you going to do something on that?
I will. I definitely will. Yeah.
I'll wait.
Again,
but
those are the kinds of things that people that go to No Echo are, you know, I know that it makes your day because it makes my day, you know, like I love that kind of stuff. And they might not have access or have time or, you know, and I will do it. I will do the dirty work for them to get that trivia tidbit. And it's funny. And Jordan is, that's a great example because I was at, you were there at the Straight Edge book. Symposium, whatever you want to call it, And I was flipping through records, and I saw the Slipknot record, and Jordan was behind me, and like, what, you know, this is, I have to say something. So I go, Jordan, and he looks at it, and his face changes, and he goes, well, what do you want to know about that? He doesn't understand that people care.
Yeah. You know?
He doesn't, he was like, what? Like, why would you care about that? Don't you want to ask me about Start Today? No. Start Today has been talked about.
Yeah.
You know, we know
there's about access to that. Access to that. It's a matter of access, but I think that's a great, at least for me, who's somebody, like I said, I love nostalgia.
Yeah.
And that kind of fits into like, and there's just not a lot of documented information because the internet wasn't like capturing a lot of that back then.
Yeah.
But so what's, because I, you know, you talk about, and this is just my kind of marketing internet brain, but you have no echo, you don't run ads, but it seems like you're using it as a platform to launch other things, like, you know, producing shows.
Uh-huh.
Like, is there a thing where you're like, because there's a value to building up an audience and not trying to monetize them, which I think the growing an audience is more important than trying to make money every single step of the way. Because you want to, you know, we're talking right now, I want somebody to hear it.
Yeah,
and that's the most important. Or why are we doing this? You want someone to read it.
If people weren't reading it, I wouldn't do it. I'm going to be honest.
Even if you're making money on it, because it's like not that much money, and be like, it's work.
Right, exactly.
But is there a thing to where you're like, hey, No Echo could be No Echo or the record label, and No Echo the podcast? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I would listen to you. Definitely would have a listener.
Yeah.
Because there's something different if you're talking to Tim Chunks or Pat DeLongery.
DeLongery, whatever. I talked to Pat DeLongery.
Yeah. I mean, I would love to listen to that and hear their enthusiasm or maybe lack enthusiasm. No,
And there's a lot of stuff that doesn't go into the written, you know, the one you see. Now, some of that is because it's off, you know, I want to tell you something, but please don't.
I know.
And that's the good stuff, right?
Yeah.
But there is stuff that I just don't put in because of it's going to be too long, people might like, you know. But the reason I haven't done the podcast thing is because I'm afraid that I won't be consistent with it.
Yeah.
And like I was saying before, the websites, people don't update them, and I hate that.
Oh, I know.
There's
nothing worse than going to something, and you haven't posted like in a month?
Yeah.
Then I'm not going to come back.
Exactly. And that's what my fear is with the podcast thing. I do a weekly show on this service called Gimme Radio.
I did a listener thing of that because I was seeking out. I want to do. I used to do XM, a little bit, so I wanted to get back into that. And I was just searching a million things, and I saw you were on. You have a show called Street Ready.
Street Ready, yep.
Yeah, and so I did a listener thing, which is was kind of the stuff that you'd imagine we were talking about. It's really my podcast voice and me talking about like. I remember buying Suicidal Tendencies, How Can I Laugh, in Staten Island.
Yeah.
I got it on tape, and it was magical. Here's
That's basically what I do. Yeah, it's same thing.
I mean, it's the same kind of now, are you, like, but you using that to maybe, like, kind of cross some things over, or is it just?
A friend of mine, Dean, back in New York, he's the guy who's, like, doing the talent kind of wrangling for that, and that's how I came into the picture for that. I do bring up No Echo every episode, in the beginning and the top of the hour, and then at the end, I bring it up, and I tell people, check it out. So I am promoting No Echo. Hopefully that helps. But the plan in terms of, like, the brand, I would love to do a podcast. That's something I've thought about a lot in the last few months. We're going to do some T-shirts. Someone's helping me with that. So I don't know. I think... I've gotten to the point now with the updating of the website that there's new content every day of some form. Some days there's three new things, which is a lot. So I think I've gotten to the point now where I have a good flow on the website part of it. So maybe it is time to do the podcast. Doing the shows is something that, quite honestly, it doesn't really involve anything for me in terms of, like, the production end of it. I don't have to go there that day and do
promoting it.
Yeah, I'm just promoting it, and I'm helping find some of the bands for it. I do want to curate something for, you know, before the end of the year, like something from top to bottom where I curate it. Where this one for Fireburn, I helped, but, you know, I want to do one where it's like every band.
Yeah,
you know, it's my pick or whatever. It depends, because in my real, like, career life, right now, I started a production company with a former coworker. I used to work at Fuse, the cable network, and we started the two of us started a production company, and we signed a deal with a bigger production company that's established, and so we're going under them, and, you know, our shows are being pitched through their agent, blah 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 blah, and we're close to finalizing a deal with with a big streamer network. So that depending on how much time that takes,
right.
That's the thing. That's why I don't know if it's the right time to start a podcast.
Right,
now.
You had to add things on.
Yeah, and with two kids, it's hard. But I have no plans of stopping. If anything, I want to continue. I want to bring more contributors on. People will write me, hey, I would love to write, and I come on, bring it on, and then they don't. You know,
of
or
course,
they, you
yeah,
know, that's
yeah.
another thing.
And so you have to sit down and get the, you know, you need the 500 words or whatever,
yeah.
or whatever
yeah.
it is.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, people can then essentially find, you know, was it NoEcho dot?
No, I don't know what the just NoEcho on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. I don't
yeah.
know.
But the site's NoEcho dot
net.
Net.
Dot net.
Yeah.
We couldn't get the dot com.
Right.
You know,
that's big bucks.
That's
dot gov taken.
Yeah.
Dot org.
Yeah.
Awesome.
It,
yeah.
It really bugs me that it's dot net. To this day, and it's, you know, four
it sounds years. Almost kind of like it's like a, you know, like a not a name brand.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, the dot com is like,
I know, it's so much sexier, but hey, it's too late now, so
yeah.
It's fine. But we will have t-shirts soon, and the question is, do I have the dot net on the t-shirt?
Oh.
Because it, you know, I don't want to mess up this. It gets ugly with the
it's
dot
very
net,
it's very ugly,
you know? So
yeah.
Let's just leave it NoEcho.
It's like a hashtag.
Yeah, let's just leave NoEcho.
Yeah,
and you know, people, if you go on Instagram and you put NoEcho in, it's gonna come out.
Yeah,
you know,
awesome. Yeah,
yeah.
Awesome. All right, that's it.
That's it.
That's it.
Wow.
Brain without benefits.